I'm happy now to welcome to the Radio Cafe Peter Plagans. He is an artist, he's an art critic for the Wall Street Journal and formerly for Newsweek magazine, and he's author of the new book, Bruce Nauman, The True Artist. He will be in Santa Fe this evening at 6 o'clock talking about the book at the New Mexico Museum of Art. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So you've known the artist Bruce Nauman for many years, and at first you didn't like his work. What was your first impression, and how and why did it change?
My first impression of Bruce Nauman's work came from seeing a suite of 11 color photographs, which are called exactly that, at an exhibition in Germany that's every 5 years called Documenta. It's like the Venice Biennale, except it takes place every 5 years. This was in 1968. I was living in Brussels at the time, and I went with a friend to the exhibition, and Bruce was in it. And the color photographs were, I thought, very smart-alecky and shallow and jokey. They were things like his hands waxing what I presume to be wooden letters that spelled hot, and it was entitled Waxing Hot. There was another one, a self-portrait as a fountain, which was a separate, bigger photograph of him, and he was about my age, 26, 27, you know, naked from the waist up. It was just a waist-up photograph posing kind of like a fountain spitting water out. And I thought they were, you know, shallow and jokey, and there was a bit of, well, how can this guy get into a big international exhibition with this sort of stuff? So that was my first reaction. How did I come to change over the years? I saw more of it. That's one thing. I had to wrestle with it. He had a retrospective exhibition really early on. He was only 30 years old at the Los Angeles County Museum of Art in 1972. I was living in Los Angeles, back in Los Angeles. I wrote a review that was kind of snarky for Art Forum. But in there, I wrestled with some stuff. The work was sculpture and some installations, and Bruce has always been a very, polymorphous artist. He changes physical format, you know, almost every time out. And I had to really wrestle with it. And the third thing was I got to know him. I met him. We had studios about a block apart in Pasadena, California, and I had to consider it. And I gradually changed. That's all I can say.
Now, there is an art world that is arguably somewhat insular and intimidating to ordinary people who aren't inside that world. And since most of our listeners are, in fact, those ordinary people who are open-minded and willing to try new things but don't always understand what they're looking at, help us to understand Nauman's work. For example, one of the first pieces that you show in your book, which is, by the way, a gorgeous and beautifully done book, one of the first pieces is a piece of cloth bunched up in the corner of a room. What are we to make of that? What's going on?
Well, first of all, you know, this is an early work by Bruce, and it's either from or right near when he was getting out of graduate school. He went to UC Davis, University of California at Davis, from 64 to 66. And he came in as a painter, an abstract, kind of abstract-y landscape painter, and he had a kind of an epiphany, which I claim in the book is one of the key moments in the history of post-war American art, where, well, what am I supposed to do, they said. And this was a guy who went to the University of Wisconsin. Regular college guy, started out as a engineering and math major and changed to an art major, wanted to paint. And when he graduated, he didn't go to New York. He went to graduate school at Davis. They gave him a studio, a room in a place called Aggie Villas, which were a kind of barracks built during World War II. And he had this epiphany of, they sent me into this empty room and said, well, just, you know, do stuff. Do art. And he had this insight that, well, if I go into this art room and do art, whatever I do in this room is art. I'm an artist. They put me in this room, etc. So he really started to push things. And the second thing was, he didn't have a lot of money. So he did things with his body, you know, taking various positions against the wall, etc. He made some things, started making sculpture, and he just really pushed the boundaries of what sculpture could be, namely how informal and kind of funky and junky looking it could be. One of the things that he did was that piece, you know, pushed up against the wall. And I can see where, if you look at that, somebody would say, well, piece of cloth pushed up against the wall, what does that have to do with anything? It had to do with him trying to get his feet under him as an artist and find out, you know, what he should do. I don't think it's the greatest piece, given the history of his thing, though it's important. And I will give you one little anecdote for people out there who aren't a part of the art world about how this... when Bruce was still in graduate school, an L.A. dealer named Nicholas Wilder, who was one of Los Angeles's really pioneering dealers of the 60s, came up, went to Bruce's studio at Davis on the recommendation of a couple of people, said, oh, let's have a show, send the stuff down. They sent it very cheaply via a moving company, you know, put it in a tractor trailer and send it down. And after he got down there, he called Bruce up and he said, thanks for sending it. It all arrived very nicely. But why didn't you send that piece that was in such and such corner of your studio? And Bruce said, well, that was some trash that he had swept into the corner of the studio. Happens to all of us.
You know, it's a funny thing, that insight, I am in a room, I am an artist, whatever I do in this room is art. And I find myself thinking about, for example, fiction writers. I mean, so many fiction writers, they go into a room and they write and they throw out their entire first novel. And sometimes it's not until their third or fourth or fifth novel that they hit their stride or it comes out good. Poets throw away much of what they write. I mean, just because you did it in your studio doesn't mean it's any good.
That's true. And the first thing I want to say is that when Bruce had this insight, it wasn't with hubris. It wasn't the statement oft attributed to Picasso that when a great artist spits on the street, what he spits is art. Bruce was saying, not that it was great art or good art, but I guess whatever I do in here is art. As an operational thing, not as a qualitative definition. The second thing is that Bruce, more than a whole lot of other artists, does throw out stuff. A lot of it is mental, though. He'll sit, because he has this way of operating. I'm oversimplifying here, but another claim I make about him in the book is that he operates kind of ex nihilo. Each time out, he goes back into that metaphorical little empty room and starts from the beginning. What do I do? He doesn't have a style that develops over time. And when he goes back into that metaphorical little room, he really sits and thinks and drinks coffee and stuff like that. His sound piece for the 2009 Venice Biennale, when he was the U.S. representative, called Days of the Week or Giorni, which is a sound piece of a kind of a fugue of the recitation of the names of the days of the week. he sat and in his studio trying to think of something and tossed away one idea after another. Nothing would come to him. And finally, his wife's, the painter Susan Rothenberg, came in and said, you know, you've been sitting here every day. What are you going to do? And then suddenly the day hit him. So he doesn't just go in there and instantly say, I have a bright idea and that this is really going to work.
We're talking to Peter Plagans about his new book, Bruce Nauman, The True Artist. Now, there are a couple of pieces in the book from which I assume that you took the name of the book. One of them is an early work that's a rectangular piece that has words written on the four sides of the rectangle that read, "The true artist is an amazing luminous fountain." And another one is a neon work that's written kind of in a spiral that says, "The true artist helps the world by revealing mystical truths." Now, help us to understand. I mean, are there any mystical truths revealed by those pieces themselves?
The answer is no. There's a little bit of a hedge toward yes. Bruce had a studio. His first professional studio was a little storefront in San Francisco, and the luminous fountain piece preceded that. And he's interested in words and language, et cetera, et cetera. He studied Ludwig Wittgenstein rather, intensely. And it was followed by the neon sign that he had made, and that went in the window. And this was a former little grocery store, so putting a neon sign in the window was, kind of the part of the thing. He's been asked, and I think he made up that statement, "Do you really believe it?" And he says, yes, but he has a kind of distance on it. The first thing is, and this is somewhat typically Nauman, that you can get a kind of endless regression on that piece. Namely, excuse me, what are the mystic truths that the true artist helps the world by revealing? Well, that the true artist helps the world by revealing mystic truths. What are those truths? And then you go around again. The spiral format of the piece, reinforces this kind of, this thing. So it's oversimplifying to sum it up, but I would say that at the time Bruce would like to believe that, but he has a very doubting, philosophical, skeptical mind. So he put it out there with kind of arm's length from it.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to look at that and not see ego.
Yeah, but I think what he does with a lot of things, yes, there is ego in it, but he takes his ego out and he puts it on a platter and says, okay, we can all look at my ego. Another ingredient in that piece is that it's a very, I don't like to use the word, but I'm forced to here, spiritual kind of piece in the content and what it says, but it's rendered in a medium which is known for sort of crassness and glitz, Times Square, adult bookstores, the word hotel blinking on and off more than anything else. So you have this kind of garish, crass medium expressing this rather, touchy-feely statement. And so you get an approach avoidance thing. Come on in, but oops, stay back. This is a little bit off-putting. And I think the ego thing, is in there. He's also not necessarily saying, I am the true artist. One of the reasons why I thought it was a good subtitle for the book, and I did convince Feiden to use it, was that it was this kind of challenge, especially given the kind of artist that Nauman is, where somebody would come along and see this big book and they'd say, Bruce Nauman, the true artist. Oh, yeah, really? You think? And then they might pick it up and look through it skeptically, which a critic friend of mine, Peter Sheldahl, who's the art critic for The New Yorker, said to me in an email, you know, it's probably the only real, the right way to approach Bruce's book is to be, I mean, his work is to be a little bit irritated by it, puzzled, put off, and that if you look, get something right away, ooh, I love that, that's not the kind of reaction that is most profitable for a viewer about Bruce's work. It is meant to be wrestled with before you get some pleasure out of it.
Well, it's a relief to hear that, because I was having some of those reactions myself as I was reading it and looking at it. And I found that some of my favorite works in the book are actually the drawings that are studies for the sculptures. And I find it so curious. And of course, he's not the only one. There are so many artists who draw exquisitely, just incredible draftsmen, and yet they make the choice not to use drawing or painting as their primary medium. How do you understand that choice on Bruce Nauman's part?
Well, I'll approach it first from the other end, which is to say that, you know, I'm a painter. I'm an abstract painter. I was always a pretty good drawer. I'd say real good in the classroom sense. You know, I went to a university art department, and it was fairly traditional starting out. My father was a kind of low-level commercial artist, so I like that stuff, and I paint. And one of the things that drew me to Bruce's work is that, it, like you say, in certain instances where it's a drawing or a study, you can really see that he can really draw. I would even be so bold as to suggest that in a lot of work, particularly, let's say, the tunnel pieces out of plaster that sit there on the floor, you can feel a real visceral sense that this guy knows how to draw. He used to know how to paint, and you can feel it. And there's something attractive about the work with that, with the work of some drier conceptual artists, doesn't quite come across. Why does somebody who knows, has a facility for drawing as well as Bruce does, and he still includes drawings, by the way, in his current work. I mean, the last big show he had in New York, the video about hand positions for playing the piano, he had drawings, you know, setting those things out, and they're really nice. He has a real touch. Why would somebody forego that? Well, you just follow your muse, you know. You go where it takes you. And I'll go back, I hope not too immodestly. To me, I was a real good figure drawer in class, but I'm an abstract painter. So somebody might say, well, gee, the guy could, if he wanted to, you know, draw a figure like Pierre-Paul Prudhomme in the, you know, back in the French Academy, but he chooses not to. You just go where you go, and if the drawing helps you, it helps you. In Bruce's case, I think it does. Some people sometimes are hindered because they're still kind of held back by the fact that they think they have to show some academic drawing ability. But Bruce does have a real touch. I like it, and I think that that's probably part of what eventually seduced me.
Now, Bruce Nauman lives here in New Mexico. How did his moving here, do you think, affect his work?
It affected it, and it didn't affect it in both at the same time. I mean, one is he did have that basic method of his of starting over and thinking something through, going back into that metaphorical little bare room in Aggie Villas at UC Davis each time. That didn't change. What obviously changed was Bruce got interested in horses in New Mexico. I don't know what his experience was before, and he met a famous horse trainer. You know, so you might also, you know, you might call a horse whisperer with a unique and very kind way of training horses. He never referred to it as breaking horses. A man named Ray Hunt, who is now passed on. And Bruce ended up on a 500 or 600 acre working horse ranch on which some people, you know, use the land. You know, I don't know how you work it. You rent it out. They can graze cattle on it. He's raised, you know, quarter horses, and he's become really serious, and he's a good rider, et cetera, et cetera. And from that, he's done things that you probably wouldn't do except in New Mexico, or at least out west in the wide open spaces, such as a video called Setting a Good Corner, which is basically just setting the corner post for a fence that, you know, designates the corral or, you know, the territory that where the horses can go and not. And he's done things with taxidermy dummies, you know, the styrofoam forms that taxidermy is performed on. And it's not the kind of thing that you would do if you were in, say, New York or San Francisco or Los Angeles.
Right, right. This book is an authorized monograph, and I wondered what the process was like of working on the book, how you worked together with Bruce Nauman.
It's really much more modest than I'm a little, what's the word, squeamish. Maybe that's too strong. About, you know, authorized monograph. Bruce has not wanted to be a part of any what he called totalizing thing. There's an awful lot of literature on Bruce out there, but it's partial in the sense of parts. There's his early work, his videos, interviews with, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. We get along. He did say, as you can probably see from this interview, told his dealer one of the things he liked about Peter was that Peter does all the talking. He's a laconic, you know, kind of guy. So basically, I interviewed him a few times in New Mexico, in New York, in Venice. Some magazine writer who wrote something about the making of the book said, gee, only like four times. And I said, yeah, but you got to understand, it's not a biography per se. It's about the work, too. And one interviews the work, as it were. You know, you look at it, ask it questions, think about it. But it was easy. He was cordial, and you know, I went to New Mexico. I'd known him from before. I went to New Mexico, stayed at his place for a bit, and asked him questions that I had on a list to clarify things that I didn't know from the research that I'd already done. The major part of the book, I mean, that felt laborious, was the editing I went through with Fiden, because they are rather picky, and was looked at by various art historians and copy editors and stuff like that. And then it was all the checking of, well, can we reproduce this? Should this be here? Do you want this in? Et cetera, et cetera. And I must say, they did a spectacular job designing the book.
Yes, indeed. So you will be here tonight in Santa Fe. We're talking to Peter Plagans, and you'll be introducing the book at 6 o'clock and talking, I guess, not to the artist himself. He won't be there, but the artist studio manager, Juliet Myers. The book is called Bruce Nauman, the True Artist. Peter Plagans is an artist and an art critic for the Wall Street Journal, formerly for Newsweek. I want to thank you very much for being with us here on the Radio Cafe.
Thank you. I enjoyed it, and I hope people will be interested enough to turn up tonight.
Excellent.